tuvimos problema con el transporte y eso, ¿no?
Sí. Voy a hacer un tema que es conocido de Bolivia. O si quieren, le hago una música de Colombia.
¿De
Bolivia?
¿Sí?
¿De Bolivia o de Colombia? Bueno, yo voy a optar por la de Colombia.
Okay.
Para ser diferente.
Ya.
So we're going to hear a song from Colombia. And you're listening to the last few minutes of Sferio here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. This has been a wonderful visit with our currently local visiting musician, Otavaleño Pedro Vázquez from Otavalo, Ecuador, y el Reino Inca. Qué gran gusto, y quisiera poder seguir así por mucho tiempo aquí en nuestro programa, pero infelizmente tenemos que acabar aquí porque tenemos nuestros compañeros que vienen entrando luego. So, ¿algún comentario más para terminar? Any last little thoughts?
De mi parte, muchas gracias aquí a Sofía. Aquí, perdóname que no me acuerdo el nombre.
Amy.
I want to thank everyone here, Sofía, Amy,
y acá la señorita
Jasmine.
Jasmine. Y ha sido un gusto de conocerle también.
It's been a great pleasure.
Gracias
to meet
por
you.
Abrirme la puerta.
And thanks for opening the doors to me.
También alguna fiesta pequeña, pues estaré juntos. Algún día.
And then there's a small party, you know, I'm available, so maybe we'll be together then.
Y muchas gracias.
Sounds great.
And thank you so much.
Okay.
Muchas gracias.
Muchísimas gracias a ustedes. Thank you so much. And stay tuned now for Music for Human Beings, right after these special messages, which sound like this.
Troubadour. It's blues, bluegrass, and vintage folk. It's 1950s country and rhythm and blues. Troubadour plays roots music without bounds or barriers. Thursday, 2 to 4 p.m. at WMBR, Cambridge.
Save your doggone soul. We'll be right back.
فمرحبا في ميوزك فور هيومن. I'm الدكتور جالس السكران and I welcome you. My pleasure in being joined today by so many of my colleagues is truly penetrating. So first of all, we are joined by my eminent colleague, Professor Levine. Professor, welcome.
It's great to be here, and I have to say today my pleasure is shallow but very wide.
It's a broad pleasure.
A very, very broad pleasure indeed in being here once again and joining all these wonderful people.
It's rare that one considers the width of one's pleasure, but I certainly think that's a relevant thing.
Well, many people, of course, have this condition known as synesthesia, where they experience sounds, I believe, as colors. And after a long period of meditation, one is able to visually experience pleasure in its full spatial dimensions.
To visually experience all things, actually.
Yes, and most particularly pleasure.
Well, then let's visualize the pleasure of being here with Ivan the Mellow.
Добрый вечер.
Welcome, Ivan.
Спасибо.
And Ivan, of course, is Siberian, for those who aren't aware, but who certainly should be. We're also joined again by Lilith the Sorceress. Welcome again, Lilith.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Lilith, of course, her enterprise is in sorcery.
Yes, it is. We actually just got done this past week with them. Inducting some new members to the Order of the Golden Dawn.
I'm actually a bit shocked. I last saw you about a week ago, and you've grown about a foot since then.
Well, yes, as I told you last week, I can control these things.
It is quite astounding.
Yes, I'm thinking of going a bit smaller for winter.
Even last week you were about 6 feet tall, and 7 feet tall, I imagine, you know, doorways might pose a problem eventually.
It's also quite hard to keep myself dressed.
Of course.
We're also joined for the first time by Majnoon. Majnoon, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Majnoon, what are your qualifications for our listeners?
Well, I have to say that, like, from the area that I'm coming from, right, people are calling after their offsprings. And one day I woke up after and I recognized that I became one with my offspring. And he was Majnoon, so I think I'm Majnoon too.
So you had a child who was Majnoon, and so it was in that way that you became Majnoon.
Exactly, kind of something like that.
I understand also that you have brought sitar with you.
Yeah, that's what he used to play with.
So again, this tying in of the other thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting because as a child growing up, my parents would never let me play with my sitar.
That's dangerous.
So I thought maybe you could start us off with some sample of maybe the flavor of the sitar, or maybe you could tell us a little bit.
I have to introduce it as well. His name is Shada. I don't know where it gets its frame from, but his name is Shada. And I think it was there too. Thank you.
that's really lovely. Let's keep that rolling. I really like that in the background there.
Now, if I could ask a question, I've heard it said by many mystics that in order to play the sitar to its utmost potential, one has to imagine and picture the image of a beloved one in one's mind as one plays.
It was not a mistake.
Oh, Mejnun, is there some image that you have to conjure up in your mind for your inspiration?
Well, exactly. Actually, I'm just telling you that image. I cannot just tell it. I'm playing it for you.
I see. So this sound is the aural manifestation of the image in your head of your beloved.
Yes, it is.
Second degree of synesthesia, so to speak.
Yeah, so there is a communication again by the use of the sound with the intention of creating an image.
Of course, vibrations again come into play.
It's all waves. It's all energies.
Now this reminds me of the time I spent on my Siberian dacha playing a balalaika, which is a poor man's version of the sitar. It's a three-stringed instrument. This really brings back some powerful memories.
Now, interestingly, the sitar that Mejnun is playing is an Iranian sitar, which should be distinguished from the Indian sitar. Sitar in the Persian language actually meaning three strings, which is ironic because Majnun's has four.
Well, of course.
Actually, that's true. And the history behind it is that one of the strings, like two of the strings, have the same note. And those two are called the lovers because they are the same, but they are an octave away from each other. They're pretty close, but they're never going to reach.
Of course, the Iranian sitar is quite a bit smaller than the Indian sitar. But they do say that one should not judge the sitar by its size, but rather by its ability.
Yeah, precisely. And really, even the small sitar can sound beautiful if it is placed in the embrace of a skillful player.
Such as Mejnun,
of course.
It's funny that you bring up this image because it reminds me again of Dr. Levine's really insightful observation that playing a sitar is like playing, so to speak, a woman and embracing and thinking about one's companion, so it is again evocative.
I have also often heard it said that cellists have no need for lovers due to the sheer size of the cello and the fact that it's placed between the legs.
So the image there being that the great beauty of the vibrations that are emitted leave the player
sated,
yeah, fully satisfied without the need for other baser drives.
Exactly.
So it's a very elevated...
In other words, you make love by making music.
Well, you know, just as age removes these requirements, so playing the cello does this for the cellist.
Well, age, besides removing the requirements, can also shift the requirements. We were talking before about the transmogrification of the senses, that is, the transferring of the sense of pleasure to a visual sense. There are many other combinations that can be quite interesting. For example, after one has achieved sufficient spiritual elevation, one can begin to smell sights. So, for example, one can start to observe the smell of a square.
Yes, I've heard of that as well.
And each polygon will have its own associated scent.
It's interesting that you bring that up. I've met many great alchemists that actually believe they can smell abstruse shapes, which obviously the octagon is the easiest to smell, but abstruse ones are very, very difficult. And they claim to possess the power. Many of them, it's something of a nutmeg mixture, cinnamon.
Yeah, I've heard that the lower order polygons tend to have a sweet fragrance, whereas more unusual shapes have a bit of a garlicky smell.
Yes.
I think it all depends on the flavors of one's experience.
Absolutely.
That's true, because one brings those flavors that have accumulated in the mind and the spirit to every new experience, and every new smell, and every new pleasure and sight.
Well, and you can imagine the excitement quite a while ago with alchemists when spices were just coming to the New World, and no one had any idea what these were. Just the basic spices for the greater, you know, community, but all of the alchemists had already kind of experienced this smell or taste.
That's it's interesting too, because the you know, there's this constant attempt to reduce things. There's this drive to take every experience and reduce it to the four elements or the five polyhedra. But maybe everything is just different from everything else.
Or maybe it's the same.
Or maybe it's all one unified experience. There's no reason to take the reductionist approach.
Now, of course, we're talking about these scents such as nutmeg and mace. And lately I've been doing a lot of spiritual cooking, you might say. I've been cooking dishes that I feel suit my spiritual mood at the time to help me tinge it with a bit of the scent of the power of taste. And lately I've used the spice known as saffron. Saffron, of course, being one of the most expensive materials in the world. Plucked by hand from a flower. To create a single pound of saffron, I believe, takes several acres of flowers and several years of labor.
What are you finding with the use of the saffron?
Well, I found that when I cook with saffron and I consume the food in an appropriately spiritually heightened state, then I become to experience a spiritual lightness of being. And a sweetness of being. I feel sweet, and I feel that I can imbue others with my sweetness, with my honey, so to speak. And on a purely unrelated economic matter, many people recently have advocated investing in gold due to the drop in value of the dollar, and I've always advocated investing in saffron instead.
Well, saffron also, which in Arabic I believe is called saffron, it's worth a great deal more than gold, isn't it? Well, as always, the show isn't about us propagating our thoughts here. It's about connections and you know, unifying in one glorious experience. So let's bring some callers, and the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, marhaban.
Hello.
Caller.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, caller. Caller, you're on the air.
The caller may be...
I can't hear you. I'm going to call back.
Okay, caller.
He may have reached a state in his being where his different senses were beginning to mix up a little bit. So instead of hearing us, he may have been seeing us or smelling us. And because he wasn't properly initiated, that could have confused him.
That experience. Let's try again.
Yeah.
Caller, are you there?
Hi.
Yes, caller, marhaban.
Oh, hi, I can hear you now.
Oh, there we are. So there's, clearly there's some connection which was made, possibly in your brain, to join those senses that were previously disjointed.
I think, you know, the switchboard probably just had a glitch, but...
Yeah, that's also possible. It's really one large nerve network.
Yeah. Made out of metal.
So, caller, tell us, have you made any spice investments?
Actually, I was going to talk about my balls and the scent that they have, and I've definitely noticed the same thing that Mr. Levine noticed, which is that whenever I eat saffron, I kind of have a very sweet honey-like scent, kind of like a nutty scent, but also very sweet, kind of like there's a beehive in my pants.
I can certainly see how that's relevant, but I mean, caller, you know, depending on the economic future, this will have a great effect on you and this interaction that you've discovered. I mean, in a great economic winter that is to come, saffron may be really quite scarce, and I wonder how you are preparing for this unavoidable eventuality.
Well, I have been experimenting with several other kinds of foods and spices. Peanut butter, I found, definitely gives my balls a very bad scent. It smells like peanut butter, which is a fine scent on its own, but you don't want to smell that when you're about to go down.
So, caller, I think we're getting off the point here. What I'm really asking is, are you hoarding saffron?
Well, I was about to get to that. I have discovered that if I just eat a lot of fruit roll-ups, I'm able to duplicate the scent. So I don't have to eat saffron at all. Or I can just eat it in a much smaller quantity mixed up in some fruit roll-up tacos, which is really the big discovery that I've made. So I've actually been hoarding some coupons for fruit roll-ups. I've been buying a lot of Nickelodeon Magazine, which has a large amount of those. And I got a Costco pass, and there's a whole wall full of fruit roll-ups, and I usually just take that whole wall.
Now, you mentioned this feeling of having a beehive in your pants, and I wonder, is this possibly related to the experience of having a bee in one's bonnet?
I think definitely. Whenever you have that vibration in your body, it's kind of a virtual, spiritual beat moving around you because it senses some sweetness.
So once again, caller, you know, we can easily ask, there are many expressions regarding like stomach flipping or butterflies in the stomach, frog in the throat, cat got your tongue. Are these all one unified experience? Is it or is this again an attempt by stinking reductionists to reduce really a beautiful, diverse set of experiences into one homogeneous gray goo mass slime?
Well, I do think that all sensation boils down to the same kind of feeling. One time when I was on a lot of drugs, I definitely had the realization that all of my sensations and even emotions kind of had the same flavor to them when it boiled down to it, and they were all kind of a unified electromagnetic kind of semi-metallic spark feel, electric sensation, and all of my emotions and senses were kind of made out of that. Kind of different spots on that same spectrum.
If you had to compare it to a specific taste, or if there was an actor that would play the sensation in a movie,
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I can see how he seems to be made of aluminum.
Yeah. He's also, I mean, he's kind of an energy beast. If there was a nuclear power plant that went nuts and created some sort of radioactive electro monster, it would probably look a lot like Nicolas Cage. Maybe a little bit more hair. But it would have the same stupid expression for sure.
Now it's interesting because in the Vedanta literature, it's often stated that this idea that we have different senses is actually a great illusion and one of the deepest illusions of our earthly existence, when in fact all senses are actually one. And if one meditates properly, then one can experience a unified form of the senses.
Mm.
And I think in cooking we try to achieve this a little bit when we make our food visually appealing as well as appetizing.
And I mean, well, that texture is very important, right, in the experience of food. And what's more, you know, a lot of chefs don't realize the importance of food sounding food-like. But if you hear, you know, I mean, one might imagine that one is eating a steak and the steak perhaps starts to meow. You know, I think that would be unappetizing. So really, it's very, I think Professor Levine's point is very well made, that we experience food with all our senses, and the well-centered chef is aware of this and really pays it its due.
Yes, and I've recently started to experiment with different types of garnishes on my food. So one recent experiment, which I think was very successful, was in order to create a nice visual flair to my dishes, I garnished them with butterfly wings.
Hmm. Caramelized?
No, just raw butterfly wings. I found once you fry them, they start to lose a bit of their color.
Yeah, I like my butterfly wings French fried, battered and then fried.
What do they taste like? Just ethereal? Or
they taste exactly the way they look.
They taste like dreams.
Oh, you see, that was going to be my guess. I was going to say either dreams or cotton candy, but the dreams was going to come first.
Well, those are pretty much the same thing.
Yes,
well,
they really are.
They taste similar, but I think that cotton candy is the synthetic dream. It's like the dream, like more like a daydream.
Well, yes. It's more sweet. I think dreams in general are more savory.
Well, of course, there are many types of dreams, and they all have their own flavors. So, of course, there are the dreams of the beloved one, which can be extremely sweet and intoxicating, and that many sitar players...
It's like fish, kind of tuna fish. It's been out for a little while. Maybe a peach, kind of mixed together, kind of a peach tuna fish salad.
Well, perhaps for certain individuals, the erotic dream may have a rotten fish taste, but I think for those who have achieved some level of spiritual elevation, the erotic dreams will have a godly smell and taste, actually.
Well, I mean, I always think of God as kind of having a tuna fish smell.
Yeah, somehow I think of more like the tastes of vanilla. You know, sort of vanilla yogurt.
I thought that too, and I also think I don't know if you guys know the pear and watermelon jelly bellies. I think a kind of a combination of those, a synergetic coupling of those two flavors.
Jelly bellies really are wonderful
because you can make any flavor out of combinations of them. They really are the most basic building blocks of taste.
And to the jelly bean connoisseur, the jelly belly is really fantastic because the jelliness in most low quality jelly beans is usually from some form of gelatin, but the jelly belly jelly bean, you know, its jelliness derives from beeswax. Beeswax, which is all, you know, this really ties into our earlier discussion there.
That some new forms of especially gourmet jelly beans instead use moon soil as their gelatinizing agent.
Mm.
Yeah, as long as it's not gelatin.
Because I think there's some good gelatin. I wonder if the gelatin from something like sea biscuit would be better from just the run-of-the-mill crap that you get in most candy.
Yeah, that's true, I mean, because they're spirit to that animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sea biscuit, I imagine, would kind of have a very specific base flavor. You know, kind of maybe it.
Well, and it's the sort of thing that, once again, you experience with all your senses when you're eating sea biscuit jelly beans. You know,
yeah, you kind of feel your leg muscles tensing and
if you ate sea biscuit glue, or if you sat in a chair which was put together with glue that was derived from the ligaments and tendons of sea biscuit, would the experience be different from an ordinary chair or one that was constructed with super glue?
Exactly, it could be a placebo effect.
It could be.
You could absolutely believe you could run faster for eating jelly beans, and somehow your legs just aren't moving faster. And
now, of course, many ancient societies had these very strong taboos against eating the flesh of an animal upon which you are riding.
While
you're riding it.
Because
it was considered such a great temptation. Once one has developed...
stick a straw in it and go.
Yeah.
Because once one has developed this close bond with the animal by riding it year after year, one begins to desire it in many ways.
You start to kind of eat each other, in a sense, anyway.
But that's actually one of the reasons that horse riding is no longer very popular. It's just the temptations can be overwhelming.
Right.
Actually, I would like to intercede as a Siberian voice of moderation here. All of this talk about jelly beans and sea biscuits is making me exceedingly hungry. So why don't we also actually discuss another human faculty, that is intellect. And is intellect a kind of sense? In other words, do you... consider it to be one of the senses, or is it somehow maybe orthogonal or even...
My belief is that it is orthogonal, but it's something that must be considered simultaneously.
I actually believe that the powers of the intellect are merely a particular form of scent.
Yeah, I think if intellect was a scent, it would smell kind of like Stephen Hawking.
No, I don't mean that intellect has a smell. I mean that using one's intellect is the same as smelling something.
So in other words, you perceive the world using one's intellect as opposed to the combination of other senses.
I mean, if we were to categorize the five senses, we would have our standard categories such as sight and touch and taste. And then under scent, we would subdivide into smelling proper and the intellect.
Intellect, right.
But, you know, when we're talking about the... I mean, sorry to return to food, but when we're talking about our unified experience of food, I think it's important that the thing that we are eating satisfies our mind as well as the other senses, because if I know that, you know, the dish before me looks wonderful, smells delightful, it looks nice, did I say that already, and also tastes good, smells good, and the texture is excellent, and it sounds like food should sound, if I know that it is my friend Jim, then I'm unlikely to be able to enjoy it fully.
And yet if you know it's your enemy Arthur or Bobby, then you will probably enjoy it ever more.
Well, I believe we have to abstain from these worldly pleasures sometimes. And
eating in general or eating other people?
Both.
I think there's something to be said.
Well, perhaps we should throw out the call number if anyone else wants to join this really delightful scentful conversation. The number is 617-253-8810.
I actually had a question for you, Mr. Levine, and that was if you had to sum up your life and your life's kind of your goals in one scent, what would it be?
Well, if I had to pick one scent, I would probably choose saffron.
Mm.
as we were talking about before.
That's what I expected. What about you? Which woman?
That's the sorceress Lilith.
Lilith?
Yes. I would have to pick... Are we going with center taste?
You have to give both.
I would say cayenne pepper for taste.
Mm-hmm.
And clovers for scent. Intoxicating.
And I wonder about the collar. Collar, do you have an overriding scent which defines your goal and purpose in life?
Yeah, just nuts. Just nuts in general. Just like, you know, you find all the nuts around and grind them up and put them into one little bowl.
All the big nuts, little nuts, round nuts,
every
square
nut,
nuts, all
every
the nuts.
Nut, every nut you can get your hands on, get your face in. You just, yeah. Just overflow that bowl with nuts.
Do you crack the nut first, or do you just throw it in there?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's kind of just, you do what you feel, and you go with the flow, and whatever smells good, whatever appeals to your touch, you just throw that in. And
chaos.
And chaos. Or nut chaos. Well, it's not chaos, because there's a boundary, which is just nuts. And I feel like that nut boundary really is what I'm trying to do in life.
And Collard, what about the legumes, which are often considered also nuts?
Screw legumes.
No legumes.
No, absolutely
so no
not.
No cashews.
F cashews.
Well, Collard, let's throw in another line here, another voice to join in with us. Collard 2,
absolutely.
Marhaban.
I am Dr. Smith.
Okay. Welcome, Dr. Smith.
I am Dr. Smith. I bother children.
Swell. So, we've lost Dr. Smith.
Do you guys have an email? I just found a great picture of a raccoon that's banging a jaguar.
Well, caller, and to all our listeners, you can reach us at humans@wmbr.org.
Okay.
And we would love to see all of your pictures.
And of course, if we receive pictures which we feel are appropriate to propagate, mm-hmm. then we will transform them from the visual senses to the auditory senses on the air.
And we might even put them on our website, which is musicforhumanbeings.com.
Caller, I have to ask you something. Have you ever had a transcendence experience while cooking?
I did make a really delicious meal the other day, and I felt good about it.
What did it consist of? Did it have nuts in it?
Actually, it didn't have nuts, which was particularly striking to me, because usually I only eat nuts, but this particular meal was scrambled tofu, and... You know, maybe, you know, I just realized it had some cayenne pepper in it, so maybe, I don't know if you had anything to do with that, but...
Well, last week I was just so enthralled by your song that I might have come to you in your dreams and told you to make something. I was just curious if you had felt that.
And is Majnun still with us?
Yes, sir.
So Majnun, if an actor had to play you in a movie... How would he smell?
Like a Majnun?
Like a Majnun.
Now, Majnun is a great name. Of course, Majnun is this character in an old Arabic folktale about this man.
Dragon Ball Z, right?
Well, he's so enthralled and in love with his beloved woman who he's not able to marry due to family differences that he goes crazy and lives with the wild animals.
Huh. You know, I just, I might be changing the subject a little bit. I just saw this thing that says that there's a huge sperm shortage in Sweden. And the Swedish lesbians have just sucked the sperm banks dry completely. So there's kind of an open letter to the rest of the world that says, if you have sperm, please come to Sweden because we need your sperm. Which is kind of neat. You know,
well, of course, nowadays very few people have sperm due to the widespread use of chemicals and plastics.
I was thinking, you know, I've been looking for a career for a while, and this seems kind of like a divine sign. And I'm also part Swedish, so I think I'm gonna look into this a little further. I wonder if I can get a travel visa for sperm donation.
Well, you know, they also are looking for, you know, people to organize books in China.
Yeah, but I can't get paid in fish. I need nuts. I need nuts. Also, I need a little bit more cayenne pepper because I'm going to make some more of this meal.
Well, when I was a youth, I actually looked into this question of earning a living through donating one's seed. And I found that in order to qualify for these various programs, one actually has to live a celibate life. They do not accept these donations from those who are active.
Yeah, you have to be a virgin.
Well, preferably.
Yeah. Well, I know that sperm bank that I applied to, you had to be a virgin, and it was actually a pretty tough application process, and I didn't make it in the first time. I got rejected.
Now, Professor Levine and caller, is this to avoid the possibility of sibling offspring long-lost meeting and accidental incest? Is that the goal of the scenario?
Actually, they try to do that a lot. And for that reason, they definitely try to make every single kid have a much different genotype than every other kid that's created through sperm banks, just so that they can set up choice encounters, because they kind of like doing matchmaking like that. You know, they send seed to the same city and...
And we talk about smell. You know, it's interesting because I understand that when choosing a mate, one looks for a person subconsciously that smells like themselves. So this would indicate in your case that you are looking for a girl with the flavor of nuts.
Right. Absolutely.
Which probably isn't really that hard to find.
Well,
most girls smell like probably these days.
Might try to find a girl who works in a peanut factory.
Peanuts aren't nuts.
Well, many people also have nut allergies, so that might be problematic there.
Right. Well, I mean, if the girl's still alive, that probably means she doesn't have them. There's kind of a nice self-selection thing working for me. You know, the girls who can't take nuts die pretty early on in life.
Now, I've heard that
all of them.
At these sperm banks, they started to genetically re-engineer the donated sperm, partially to avoid the sibling problem, but also to create the possibility of designer babies.
Mm-hmm. I really want a designer baby. I don't know about you guys, but I'm really excited.
Babies with stripes or
I was thinking like sort of a fire decal type deal.
I'm celibate, being a ordained rabbi, but if I were to have a baby, I would definitely prefer this designer baby process, and I'd prefer to have my baby born as a 4-year-old child. In other words, mimicking the developmental process by 4 years ahead of time to avoid the nights, you know, spent up dealing with crying babies and so forth.
And also have it presumably designed to die before it reaches the teenage years to avoid all of those issues.
Or more humanely, to just skip the teenage years, to go straight from 4 to 10 and then 10 to 20.
So straight into...
Yeah, why not just start out at 20?
In adulthood?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just program in all this stuff, you know. Have the genes actually, you know, set up a fully developed personality.
I believe the female hips are not wide enough in their current configuration to bear a 20-year-old.
C-section.
You gentlemen have no idea how many people come ask us this yearly. It's actually, it's become exponential growth lately.
So that may be the type of modification that we want, is designer babies with extremely wide hips. So
sure.
Let's bring another voice in on this. on this very, very deep discussion. Caller 2, marhaban, welcome.
So are designer babies allowed to skip their teenage years? Or does that turn into something that people shun upon? What if you designed yourself to... Well, can you answer my first question?
Well, Robert, is it? I think that it's often preferable that we have people in our lives that don't have acne.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
It ruins so many lives.
So by avoiding the teenage years, that really solves that problem.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder...
don't have to kill themselves.
Robert, were your teenage years particularly difficult or stressful?
I think this whole system is pretty gross. So I decided to opt out of my teenage years and try to ruin my body with drugs.
So you cool. spent that entire period from age 13 to 19, 7 years, in a drug-induced coma, unaware of the entire development process that was occurring and the massacre that was, you know, happening to your face and hands?
Well, I didn't really like it. You know, I like to look in the mirror a lot, actually, and I always have.
That's cute.
So it was more of an incubation stage for you?
I don't really know.
With punctuated
group. I know with, that I don't really appreciate
Well, they're very awkward years, of course. It's a transition stage, and we all know that.
What if you were a teenager, and you had a teenage dog, and the dog was always trying to hump you? What would you do?
That would be awkward and difficult, I think.
I think I would get...
If it was always licking itself, would you help it? Because it didn't have hands?
I think it's a moral imperative, yeah, definitely.
Well, I think I might help such an animal by having its genitalia removed and placed closer to its head.
What if I like the chick? Should I get my genitalia removed? Because we don't really need any more babies. Should I just chop them off?
Have you ever performed a circumcision?
Myself?
Yes.
I
any of you?
I've had to once in the desert.
Right. So you know how easy it is. So, Robert, if you really need to, you can definitely just grab a paring knife from your kitchen and just kind of close your eyes and just go with what feels right.
Well,
and
you know,
when you're done, you will have exactly what you need.
Well, now callers, I should mention that there are medical procedures that will render you infertile without the the difficult to explain blood stains and scars.
I'm still probably gonna want to look at boobs. That's pretty screwed up too, huh?
Well, one of course hears about the eunuch calm very often these days, and the
unicorn?
Sort of. The eunuch calm.
Oh.
The serenity that one can achieve by removing all sources of sexual lust and desire.
Yeah, and the boobs and stuff that you'll grow as a result.
Food? You boobs and food?
No, just boobs.
Well, there's this debate among mystics about whether the proper approach to mysticism is to remove all worldly desires and to become a eunuch and an ascetic. Or whether the more spiritually elevated approach is to embrace all one's lusts and desires, but to infuse them with higher meaning.
Well, I'm sure you're all aware that castration has many biological benefits if it occurs before puberty, including a lifespan that... according to modern biological theory, may be extended by as much as 50%. So it's something to consider for the boys.
Yeah, I think most people would really benefit from having the option to switch on and off their testicles. And I don't know.
Well, but like, perhaps you should just gain the mental and spiritual ability to do that on your own.
Right.
Wouldn't that be more beneficial and
efficient?
Yeah, and these days nursing classes are like the cheapest that they've ever been. So I'd really recommend that.
Are you allowed to get erections in public? Is that legal?
Of course, it's not legal on the radio, so we need to make sure that we stay calm here in the station.
Why? That's a normal question, I think.
Well, no. The question is fine, but we all have to remember that it's not 10 o'clock, and so children are probably listening. And I think it would be good if each of us took the time now to give a message to the children.
Babies come from Stork?
And for instance, from Robert, I think that would be his message. And my message would be, keep studying and don't play with knives in the desert. And I don't know, my co-hosts, perhaps Ivan the Mellow would have a message.
So, unfortunately, Ivan has a deeply pessimistic view of the subject.
Of children?
Not only of children performing self-circumcision, but also of this whole subject of intelligent design and people, so to speak, modifying their naturally endowed features. I'm more of a traditionalist in the Siberian sense.
So
I believe if you're born with a fifth limb, the fifth limb has to stay there.
Right, so the traditional attitude would be that if God had intended us to fly, we would have been born with wings.
His wings, exactly.
And if God had intended us to run, we would have been born with sneakers. And and so on.
I think that's childish, because you can fly without wings. You can fly just through concentrated force of will.
But it's not natural.
Sure. I mean, look at all the bees. Look at bees out there. Look at airplanes.
Well, caller, I wonder if you have a message for the children.
Actually, unfortunately, I'm not allowed to directly address children for reasons that I'd rather not go into.
Yeah, I thought children were teenagers.
I'm
and
not
old
sure.
Teenagers. I thought children were punk rockers. I don't know about these children that you have. I was a designer baby. I just wanted to be a designer baby. What the heck?
Yes, most children, I think, are quite morally immature and selfish creatures who fight amongst themselves. And my only advice to them would be to grow up as quickly as possible and
eat that growth hormone, bovine hormone.
Well, Professor Levine, do you have anything for the children?
Well, that was my advice, to grow up as quickly
and
possible and not to savor one's childhood.
And Lilith?
I would have to agree with Professor Levine. Grow up as quickly as possible. It's much better.
Life is definitely better as an adult, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
And perhaps our brother, Majnun there, do you have a message for the children?
Nothing special, I would say. Just wait. Wait, see what happens.
Just wait and see.
Actually, I would like to add one further comment. Practice your balalaika.
Well, unfortunately, everyone, we're out of time, so ma'a salama, callers.
Bye.
Eat food.
And ma'a salama to my guests, to Majnun.
Goodbye.
And to Lilith the Sorceress.
Yes, thank you. It was wonderful again.
To Ivan the Mellow.
Dobry vechor, товарищи.
And to Professor Levine.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Dr. Janis Sakran here on Music for Humans. We are New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'a salama.
for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.